That is the International Morse Code signal, and that marks the beginning of my program, Gilbert Talks Taxes, because, as we all know, taxation with representation has not been such a good idea either, and I would even argue this morning that we have no representation in what's going on in D.C. My name is Gilbert Carmona. I am an enrolled agent. An enrolled agent is a person permitted to practice before the Internal Revenue Service. I prepare tax returns. That's basically what I do, and I do investments. And I do it for you, the taxpayer, and my job is to have you pay the least amount of tax that we can legally pay. That is my whole purpose for doing this. Tom, my engineer this morning, the ever cheerful Tom. Good morning, Tom. I see you're very happy this morning. Yeah, Tom and I have been talking here for a few minutes about some of the things going on, and it's very discouraging. I'm going to get into that in 1 minute, but we're not going to be discouraged, as my wife encouraged me this morning. Do not be discouraged. I'm going to get into that in 1 minute. The program is Gilbert Talks Taxes. I am a tax preparer. I have two offices, one at 704 Oak Street in Forest City, right next to Big Dave's Fish Camp. There, the former Carter Bank building. I have another office in Tryon, the beautiful Art Deco building, right off the historic downtown Tryon at 226 South Trade Street. Those of you that want an appointment with me, you can reach me at 828-289-9300. That's 828-289-9300. And last week, I didn't welcome people right away, but those of you live streaming us, www.wcab59.com. How come they didn't get the zero on that web address? It should be 590, Tom. Those of you watching us live streaming here, see me today. I am in my vintage Brazilian tie. Look at that, Tom, huh? It's fantastic here in the aqua room. The blue. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom. It's aqua, Tom. It's aqua. You obviously haven't talked about colors with my wife. It's aqua. So are we in? When is the first? Anyway, good morning. Those of you live streaming, good morning. And they pick me up later on the internet, that thing called the internet, that wonderful invention that we have. And those of you that call me, thank you. Those of you that email me, you can go to my website, GilbertTalksTaxes.com, and you can also listen to the podcast, the audio of past programs as we enter our 10th year of doing this, and we're very excited about that. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about, but we were talking earlier about the weather. You said it was going to get down into the 30s overnight coming up?
Midweek.
Yeah. So we could realistically be looking at a frost here pretty soon.
We'll probably have a frost.
Christy already had me cutting the peonies down. They're gone for the year. Yeah. She's already got me in fall clipping mode. You laugh. You laugh, Tom.
I know.
The coveted peonies. Oh, they are beautiful. They are. I see why she labors over them. And we are getting our flowers and everything at our new place are just coming in beautiful, the lantanas and everything. And I have a new urn. Well, it's not really. It's been there for a couple of months now, but it's looking beautiful. I had a sculptor make me an urn. I wanted an urn the size of one they have at Biltmore. And boy, did he give me one. Handmade it there. And we've got a Japanese evergreen in it. And it looks beautiful, the flowers. But those die with the first frost. All the flowers,
yeah.
Die with the first frost. I know, and the one who Sherman helps me. Sherman MacArthur, great guy, helps me with the landscaping, and he doesn't like to put in the winter flowers. He says they just look terrible all winter, and by the time they look good in the spring, it's time to pluck them up. So I'm like, I'm with you, Sherman. One less thing to trim. So I'm gonna talk. Okay, so let me get this out of the way. I'm gonna talk a little bit about, let me get this part out of the way first. The IRS, I said it a couple of weeks ago, they are doing this. The IRS is extending filing deadlines for people that are impacted by the terrorist attacks in Israel. They do qualify for some tax relief. And when I first read this, I was like, well, that's really not going to apply to anybody, but it is applying to people. It's applying to people right here in Rutherford County. There are some people that are going as volunteers charities and philanthropic organizations are going over there. And there are people right here from this county that are actually involved in this. So this tax relief does apply to you. They issued this October 13th. The Internal Revenue Service announced today, October 13th, a tax relief for individuals and businesses affected by the terrorist attacks in the state of Israel. These taxpayers now have until October 7th. So you're going to get an automatic extension on the April deadline. Have until October 7th of 2024 to file various tax returns, make tax payments, and perform other time-sensitive tax-related actions. So pretty much, businesses and individuals affected by the terrorist attacks, all deadlines are waived. For all whatever forms you're filing, this is a blanket announcement. This is covering all forms. So whether you're filing 990s, 1120s, 1120s, 1040s, which is the individual return, 941s, I mean, there's a whole list of them. You've got until October 7th, 2024. So you have a whole year. They're doing this. And then it was posted on the website, irs.gov, if you want to read more about it. But the bottom line is filing and payment relief is enacted. And then it goes on and it gives a little thing. And at first when I read this, I thought, well, I've got some Americans that have businesses over there in Israel that they report on their American tax returns. And I thought, well, it might affect some of them. I've got actually four over there that have businesses, two in Tel Aviv. I believe the one is in Ashkelon, which is right north of Gaza, and some other places. So I thought, but then as I read this whole thing from the IRS, it says any individual affiliated with a recognized government or philanthropic organization and who is assisting in the covered area, which I'm pretty sure the entire state of Israel is a covered area right about now. At that time, it might have been limited, but I think they've expanded the whole thing. So I'm going on a limb there. I don't exactly know what the covered area is, but I know it's growing. So the covered area, such as a relief worker, and I know several people here who are getting involved and going to be doing some boots on the ground relief work. So, and I think this is a good thing that they did this and they've extended this, because with everything else they have to worry about, not worrying about a bunch of filing deadlines is one less thing that you have to handle, especially now because we're coming into tax season, right? We're just 2 months away from getting it all started. And this thing is just starting over there. It is not coming to an end anytime soon. Okay, so I got that out of the way. And if anybody has any questions about that, or you do have some business dealings over there, and you're wondering if that affects you, please feel free to give me a call. My telephone number is 828-289-9300. I can at least help you navigate if these extensions apply to you. Okay, I'm going to talk about something, Tom. And I don't want to come across like I saw this coming, because anybody who understands how computers work and how the internet works really should have seen this coming. And I'm shocked that our government let this happen. I'm going to talk about a man named Charles Littlejohn. Have you heard about Charles Littlejohn? Okay, well, let me tell you about this guy. Let me tell you about Charles Littlejohn, 38-year-old Charles Littlejohn. Let me go here because I want to tell this right. I've spent the last couple of days reading about this, and this is the thing that's got me very discouraged. And my wife says, no, you're not going to be discouraged. You're going to be encouraged. So Charles Littlejohn, 38, pleaded guilty October 12th to stealing President Trump's data from the IRS. Okay, that wasn't all he took. That's the high profile case. So I'm reading the story. This is Los Angeles Times, and it's all over the internet. Okay. A former Internal Revenue Service contractor. So he's a contractor. And I've said on the radio, Tom, I've been saying this for years. that these are the people I was worried about. Contractors. Okay, we're learning now. Let me back up a little bit. We're learning now, and I've talked about this on the radio. We are learning now that most data hacks, because I always talk about, I'm always warning the senior citizens about scams and getting called and all that stuff is scams and data breaches. You know, Equifax had 158 million files, individual people's files, hacked. You know, and whenever you see the story on the news, it's some guy in front of a laptop with a hoodie on and sunglasses, which is ridiculous. Why is the guy wearing a hoodie and sunglasses while he's on his laptop? You know, we're learning that this is not who's doing this. All the research that's now coming out is that the estimates started low, well, 50, 60%. I'm going to tell you now, it's probably more like 80, 90% are inside jobs. Inside jobs. That means an employee, usually a disgruntled employee. They're never gruntled, Tom. They're always disgruntled. They're never gruntled. A disgruntled employee or a person that will actually get the job with the premeditation of doing this. Okay? Because this data is worth money. And there's always a buyer for it, believe me. And I said it. I told everybody, and people looked at me like I was from another planet. I'll never forget this. Okay, let me back up a little further. My minor is in computer science. Okay, and I got my degree in 2003. A lot has happened in 20 years. Yeah. I mean, my minor is in computer science from 2003. I know a PhD whose PhD is in Fortran. Okay, so... And can you imagine what has changed in just the last 20 years? I mean, the technology that's happened. So if I saw this coming, I'm like, why is nobody else seeing this? But I told people, I said, when the Equifax, and I was here on the radio, I talked about it for at least 15 minutes. I told Emily, we've got to find a way to go back on these old tapes because I have no way to do it. I've never indexed them. 10 years of being on the radio. I don't have any way to go back, but I want to go back and find those because I said this was an inside job. There is no way somebody logged into Equifax, a hacker wearing a hoodie and sunglasses, logged into Equifax and downloaded 156 million files. I mean, the data spike on the network should have shut the network down.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even... Anybody that's tried to log into Equifax and get their own information, it takes 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's three passwords and then you gotta, and then and if you put in one thing wrong, it locks you out for 24 hours. It's a deal. You're going to tell me somebody hacked in and took 156 million files. That's, I don't know. I have no idea how big their files are or how they encode their files or anything, but I would venture that there are many, many gigabytes of data involved in 156 million, 156 million files. This was clearly an inside job. Nobody's ever admitted it. Nobody's ever whatever. Equifax kind of just, the whole thing just got swept under a carpet somewhere. But now we know other people that have been caught, hospitals. I mean, the laptop at the hospital in Spartanburg, that was clearly. So when I heard 5 or 6 years ago, that the IRS was going to be using these third-party contractors, because forever we told you the IRS will never call you to collect that. Nobody will call you saying they represent the IRS. And then the IRS did that. They started using third-party contractors. And I said, beware. Now third-party contractors have access to your files.
Right.
And who's watching them? Who's watching them? Because I know most of the IRS and people that I speak with on a day-to-day basis. Yesterday, I was on the phone yesterday for about 3 hours with the IRS. I spoke to 4 different revenue officers, and most of them are dedicated people to their jobs. And most of them are trying to do a good job, and they're trying to help. You know, when you call, they try to help me. They try to help me get things resolved for the taxpayer. And I can say that about 95% of my interactions with the IRS. And I have a lot of them, okay? So this is what I do. Talk to the IRS. And even when I was at the IRS forum in Orlando a couple of months ago, the people that were there were all very nice, very, you know, about their jobs, about how we can do our job better, about, you know, educating us, the tax professionals, so we can do our job better and help you, the taxpayer. I mean, really, that is what they're about. It's a thing, okay? They're not just saying that. They're doing it. I can say that about most of them. Of course, there's people that it's just a job and they're just waiting till 5 o'clock to go do something else. But then you got others that are blatantly don't care. But that's a very small number to my interaction. But who's watching these contractors? Nobody. Who's vetting them? Nobody. And if you're vetting the company, okay, so I hire your company, I hire Tom Inc. to come do this job. Who's overseeing your employees? You know, when you get three or four tiers down, what's happening? Okay, so we've got this man, Charles Littlejohn, age 38. He pleaded guilty October 12th to stealing Donald Trump's data. But that's not all. Okay, so everybody that hates Trump is applauding this guy. But that he didn't stop there. It wasn't just Donald Trump's. And that's what they think. This guy was not. We don't know the motive, by the way. Because he pleaded guilty, there's no trial. So we know nothing about this guy. This guy totally went off the radar and disappeared. So October 12th, he pleaded guilty. Oh, whoever just called, call in again.
I hit it.
Beep, beep, beep. Somebody was calling. Somebody's got a question, a tax question. Yeah. It might be Charles Littlejohn. He might be calling. He might be calling. He pleaded guilty October 12th to stealing Donald Trump's data. And of course, that's the big story because, you know, Los Angeles Times hates Donald Trump. So they're going to make it seem. And leaking it to the newspaper. He also stole tax return information about thousands of wealthy Americans. Yeah. He got Elon Musk. He got Jeff Bezos. He got another website I went to listed a bunch of them, hedge fund manager Ken Griffin, the Facebook guy, whatever his name is, Zuckerberg,
yeah,
and Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
So he got some like leading Democrats. So it's not just, this wasn't about Donald Trump. Donald Trump's is the tax return that was the most in demand because it was, he did it right before the election.
Yeah, right.
So he pled guilty. And this is the part I'm so just disgusted with. Disappointed with is, well, let me get right to it. So the manner in which Littlejohn pulled off one of the most egregious security breaches in IRS history was revealed Sunday in a court filing. So it was revealed, but there's very little details. Lawmakers and government watchdogs have repeatedly, and Gilbert Carmona, that should be in there in this, I'm going to call the LA Times and tell them. Lawmakers and government watchdogs have repeatedly warned about lax safeguards at the IRS. Last year, the IRS processed 260 million tax returns. That's a lot of paper. I mean, they shuffle a lot of paper. And that's every year. The filing, there's nothing about what his motives were. We have no idea. I read what the judge said in the case. And it seems to me like he was some kind of a social justice warrior. This is just my take on it. We'll know more as the thing goes on a little bit. Because she made a comment about, you know, taking the law into his own hands. So I don't think this was a get Trump moment. It was all people. He was trying to show that the rich don't pay taxes. That was his whole argument. Or his whole thing, because that's what the New York Times, when they published Trump's tax returns, and they did it right before the election. So there's a question of, did this affect the election? Well, of course it did. I mean, of course it did. It gave fuel to a fire that, Hillary Clinton started that. But you remember Donald Trump said, when Hillary Clinton said he doesn't pay taxes, and that makes him a criminal. And Donald Trump, and look it up, the video's all over YouTube. It's been posted by thousands and reposted by thousands and thousands of people. She said that makes him a criminal. He doesn't pay taxes because she's trying to act like she stands up for the little man. Like, right. Anyway, she said that. And he said to her, no, that makes me smart. I use the tax code. She said, and he said to her, if you don't like the tax code that allows me to pay very little taxes, then change the tax code. And he's right. But then he said to her, but you won't change the tax code because you and all of your friends are using the same tax code that I'm using to pay no taxes. And it shut Hillary up. I mean, literally, it literally, and everybody, that was called one of the most honest moments in any debate, because it was honest. What he said was absolutely true. Like, nobody argued that what he said was true. And so, and he's right. So this guy must be one of those, we don't know. But this is the part that gets me. So the question is, how did he do it? Because the way the IRS works, or the way their thing works, is if you're a contractor, there's safeguards. So, and I've been told by auditors, even they on their laptops, so you're a government employee, you've got a government laptop, you log into your portal, you can't stick a jump drive in your laptop and download it from the IRS to your laptop's jump drive or to your laptop. The system won't allow you to do that. They do have some safeguards in place. So there, everybody's like, well, how did he do this? How did a contractor, not even a government employee, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, contractor did this. So to avoid detection, Little John accessed all these tax returns using what's called generalized parameters. So he made some generalized parameters. I'm thinking the parameters involved zip codes. This is just me. I don't know for a fact. Zip codes, dates, possibly, because I'm thinking, what are the parameters that you can query for? And dollar volumes of income is the only thing I can think of. More is going to come out, I'm sure. But well, here's what he did. Here's how he got around the whole IRS system, their entire firewall. And this was so simple, it's borderline genius what he did. He then uploaded the data to his personal private website. So it was a website-to-website transfer which the IRS computer is used to doing. It was not, he did not, because everybody would probably try to put it on a jump drive. That's the preferred method of stealing data, right? I mean, they've got jump drives now literally the size of a thumbtack that hold a ton of data. He literally had a private website, went from the IRS's website, and this allowed him to avoid all the IRS protocols designed to detect and prevent large downloads and uploads. That's the data spike I'm talking about. And then once it was on his private website, he did whatever. Then he then turned the data over to the New York Times, and he turned it over to another website, which called ProPublica. It's one of these websites, like a WikiLeaks website that just leaks data. And they leaked all this stuff. And, you know, so September of 2020, right before the election, the New York Times publishes a story that Donald Trump only paid $750 in federal income taxes in 2016 and 2017, and he had paid no taxes for 10 of the previous 15 years, which I'm surprised he even paid $750. I really am. And then he stole. So the same guy has data on Bezos, Musk, Ken Griffin. Now, interestingly enough, and the guy used two computers, by the way. I mean, this guy knew what he was doing. This guy was not an amateur. And I've tried to look him up, and there's very little data on him. There's nothing. Like, this guy's been totally underground. His LinkedIn page just says he worked for this company. He worked for two companies. And so, but we still don't know who he was working for when he did this. It's like they're not saying the name of the contractor. Ken Griffin. I said I was going to get to the contractor part. Okay, so all these billionaires, millionaires, whoever that had their data stolen, what can they do about this? What can Donald Trump do about this? Nothing. Ken Griffin, the hedge fund manager, sued the IRS for not safeguarding his data. You know what the IRS said? And the judge agreed? The guy's not a government contractor. Talk about the fox designing the hen house. Huh? They gave the guy the job, gave him access.
Yeah.
And then when he did something wrong, they said, it's not our fault. So, and then Donald Trump's lawyers said, this guy needs to be sentenced. Do you know what? So I'm really going to get past the rest because it's really, it's really bad. It's really bad. Do you know what the guy's sentence is going to be? The maximum sentence because he did a plea deal? 5 years.
Nothing.
And actually, what they're saying is if he goes to jail at all, that's the part that's got me. If he goes to jail at all, it's going to be 8 to 14 months with probation and good behavior and yada, yada, yada. They're going to sentence him January 29th of 2024 is the sentencing. And the judge that accepted the plea deal, ready for this one? The judge that accepted the plea deal, the Honorable District Judge Anna C. Reyes, who is a, wait for it, Biden appointee, right? I mean, she's a woman, Hispanic, and it goes on. She's the first LGBTQT, or openly LGBTQT judge, Anna Reyes. She accepted this plea deal, and everybody that has gone up and said 5 years is not enough for what this guy did, she said, no, it is, and she's going forward with the deal. So it's going to be interesting to see what is going to happen with this. So I was very, 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 how many varies can I throw in this? Disappointed because this man does this thing, you know? So my wife, who I tell these things to, she hears it all. She says, I live with Gilbert Talks Taxes. Somebody said, do you listen to your husband's radio program? She says, no, because I live with it. I live with Gilbert Talks Taxes. Gave me these scriptures because I was very, like, just down about the whole thing. Romans 9:28, for the Lord will execute his sentence upon the earth. He will conclude and close his account with men completely and without delay, rigorously cutting it short in his justice. And I'm telling you, when you look at Israel, when you look at this, when you look at these politicians, when you look at what's going on, you feel hopeless. You feel hopeless. You feel helpless. You feel like there's nothing you can do. And, you know, you stand on the wall and sound the warning. I mean, how many people have been warning the IRS? These contractors, it's not a good idea. This is bad. This is bad. And what does this just tell them all? Hey, go ahead and do this. You'll get a slap on the hand and a couple of months probation. I mean, this is the most blatant data breach ever at the IRS. And so the IRS can never say they've never had a data breach because they used to say that. We've never had a data breach. And it was true. The IRS actually had a firewalled system that was never hacked that we know of.
Yeah.
That we know of. But I believe if they'd ever been hacked, we'd know it. There's enough whistleblowers in the IRS, which is a good thing. There's enough whistleblowers in there that we would know it. They can never say that again. And the other scripture she gave me, so let me read that again. Let me read Romans 9:28 again. For the Lord will execute his sentence upon the earth. He will conclude and close his account with men completely and without delay, rigorously cutting it short in his justice. And then Hebrews 10:30. For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, retribution and the meting out of full justice. Rest with me. I will repay. I will exact the compensation, says the Lord. And again, the Lord will judge and determine and solve and settle the case. He will settle the case. He will settle the case of his people and he will settle the cause. And that's all we have. That is all we have. Because forget justice with this group, especially this group in D.C. By the way, Mr. Little John, where do you think he lives? Where do you think he lives? Washington, D.C. I know. Some stories just write themselves, don't they, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
Some stories just write themselves. Tom, I need a drink of water. Let's take a really quick break here. I'm going to do some public service announcements, and I will be right back with Gilbert Talks Taxes. I'm going to talk about, when we get back, I'm going to explain one more time about capital gains. So this is the time of the year now. We're doing tax planning, having a lot of people come in, and a lot of people have been selling real estate. I'm having people sell a lot of inherited land, inherited real estate. You know, we have a generation that's passing away, and they're leaving a lot of inheritance to their heirs. And I'm having a lot of heirs come and asking me questions about what to do. So I'm going to kind of get into that. And how is capital gains calculated? And I'm going to give you a couple of, you know, caveats, a couple of things to watch out for, a couple of things to do on the front end that may save you some time on the back end. So let's go ahead and take a break. This is Gilbert Talks Taxes, WCAB AM 590 FM 100.9. Okay, we are back. The program is Gilbert Talks Taxes, WCAB AM 590. Hold on a second. I'm having some things happening here. Okay. AM 590, FM 100.9. Those of you that need to reach me to make an appointment, we are taking on new clients. We are accepting new clients. And this is the time of the year to get in. My telephone number is 828-289-9300. And I say that because it's nice when we can start early and I can be there for your end of the year planning and be ready to start next tax season, you know, with your information already on file and ready to get it going. It makes the whole process a lot easier, and we can get these tax returns timely filed. So that's the advantage of starting to work with me in November and December instead of showing up in February and saying you can't find your tax preparer, which is usually what happens. Those of you live streaming me, thank you so much. www.wcab59.com. Thank you. Those of you that tune in later, thank you again. So I've got a couple of things here. I want to go. Let me just real quick talk about capital gains. Capital gains. So the whole inheritance subject is very tricky. Very, very tricky. People don't really understand it. The last couple of programs, I talked about the gift tax, gifting. You want to, you're older, you're winding down your estate. You want to start giving some of that money away, which people do. Gifting is a process, a way to do it. Okay. If you're in that boat, give me a call and I can help you get a hold of it, because there is some rules and regs to it of how you do it. And no, the gift is not taxable to the person that received it. They don't pay the tax. It's actually counterintuitive of what people think. They think, well, I don't want to give my granddaughter $20,000 or $15,000 or whatever. A lot of times I'll see grandparents that want to pay for grandchildren's college, or the grandchildren are going to college, or the grandchildren are getting married and they want to buy them a car, or they want to do something like that, or they want to give them some money for a down payment on a house, whatever. I mean, there's a million scenarios. They want to give them some money. But they say, well, I don't want them to pay the tax. Can you tell me what the tax they would pay is so I can, you know, make sure to give them enough money? And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. They get that money and they move on. You're the one that pays the tax. The giver pays the tax. But it's not like you give them, you know, $16,000 and then you're going to pay tax to the government on it. There's a form we fill out, and there's a lifetime exclusion that you have on your inheritance, okay? So inheritances are not taxed. The first 12,060,000, why that number? I don't know. It's a number they picked. $12,060,000 of inheritance is not taxed. Okay. This is, I'm not talking probate. I'm not talking, anything else. I'm talking about inheritance tax. So somebody dies and they leave you money. You don't pay tax on that money. Okay. Generally speaking, there are some exceptions to that. If they leave you a 401k, if they leave you an IRA, that money was put away tax free. So if you're the beneficiary of a 401k or an IRA, you're going to pay tax, okay? Because no tax was ever paid on that money. The other thing that happens is they'll leave you some land. They'll leave you a house. They'll leave you an asset. Typically what we see is land and a house. Although I've seen artwork. I've seen very, very high-end, expensive musical instruments. very expensive musical instruments. Baby grand pianos worth, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Things like that. Artwork. The other thing I see a little bit of is coin collections. And then, of course, stocks. Stocks and bonds. So people are texting me questions now. I'm sorry. I got distracted. Oh boy, that got it. That got that going. Okay, talking about stocks and bonds. So they'll leave stocks and bonds. Okay, so, but mostly, typically, it's grandma's house that you inherit. And this is what I've been seeing a lot. A lot of people don't understand how this works. Okay, so the house is in grandma's name. Grandma, you know, grandpa's already died. It's already been put in grandma's name. Grandma dies. And you are the beneficiary, or a group of people's the beneficiary. Okay, so you get what's called a step up in cost basis. A step up in cost basis. So, and this is a story I've heard twice this week, right here. One's in Henderson County and one's right here in Rutherford County. Grandma and grandpa built the house themselves and lived in it while they were building it. I mean, the one grandma, she's got all these stories about how they didn't even have closets. They just put nails in and hung their clothes up on nails. Yeah, and just lived there and just had a little stove and cooked and did what they could. And they would go to the lumber yard with $5 or $6 and come home with a bunch of wood and put that wood up and then go buy a window, go buy a door and put them in. And that's how grandma and grandpa built their house. So how do you calculate the cost basis of that house? Right? You know, and you can't use those numbers. I mean, those numbers haven't been adjusted for inflation and blah, blah, blah. So what happens is you have what's called date of death step up. The day that grandma dies, the people that inherit that property, now their cost basis is, what is that house worth today? What is that house worth today? That is your cost basis. So grandma dies, leaves you a house. What is it worth the day she died? It's worth $100. I'm just making numbers up. It's worth $150,000. Okay. So how do you find out what it's worth? It's really important that you make some kind of, especially if it's a complicated estate and there's multiple properties, try to document. And I meet with the executors and I try to put this into them. Try to document what, you know, the date of death. I mean, in the one scenario, they couldn't even tell me what date the grandmother had died. They couldn't remember. I'm like, well, did you have the property appraised? Maybe you might need to get an appraisal. I had somebody one time say, well, the appraisal was $300. I'm like, so pay the $300. You've inherited a $300. In this case, it was like a $200,000 or $300,000 piece of real estate. Yeah. You need that appraisal. Now, or if you don't get an appraisal, at least talk to some real estate people, some brokers, some agents, wherever, you know, in some states they're called agents, in other states they're called brokers. Here in North Carolina, we're an all broker state. A real estate broker, get a broker opinion, maybe get a letter. I told the one lady, I said, she said, well, the real estate agent, this is in Florida. This is real estate she inherited in Florida. She said, well, the real estate agent said the house was worth, you know, the date that grandma died was worth, I can't remember, $300,000. And I said, well, can you get an email? Did he give this to you in writing? She said, no, we were on the phone. I said, well, just ask him, can you please send me an email with that information? So you at least have an email that we can print up and show an auditor. Yeah. And that's, you know, you don't have to have documentation. You just have to have, you know, a proof that you at least were looking. Don't make it simple. Keep it simple. So the date of death step up. So in this scenario, the house is worth $300,000. You turn around and you sell it for $300,000. You have no taxable gain at all. There's no taxable gain. You got it for your step up in basis. You got it. Your cost basis. So it's like you bought it for $300,000 is maybe a better way to explain it to people, because it's very confusing to people. Well, I sold the house for $300,000. How much tax do I owe? Well, what was your cost basis? And they look at me like, you know, rabbit in the headlights look, you know, they don't know. Well, it's your cost basis because you're going to pay it on the difference. So let's just say grandma dies, leaves you the house, it's worth $300,000. You put it on the market. You sell it for $400,000. You have now made $100,000 of capital gains. You will pay tax. The beneficiaries will pay tax on that $100,000 gain, whoever is the beneficiary that owns that house. Now, if the house, okay, we'll get that. And I'm going to keep it real simple because there are some exceptions, but for the most part, this is the general rule. Now, there's a scenario I've seen. I've talked about this on the radio before, too. Let's say you, Tom, and your brother, Tim, and your other brother, Todd, inherit grandma's house. So Tom, Tim, and Todd inherited grandma's house. Well, you know, grandma lived in the house for, 500 years. And the house, she never fixed a thing in the house. You know, it's like the one grandmother, they put the house for sale. While she was still alive, they decided to sell the house and have her move in with one of the children, which was actually a very good move for them. And they went and they said, only one burner works on your stove. And she said, well, I only use one burner. That's all I need. That's all I need. And the oven doesn't work. I don't bake. Okay. Well, the person buying the house may want to use all four burners, yeah, and they may want to bake. So let's get that fixed. So grandma passes away. Now you inherit the house. You go to sell it. And the real estate agent says, you know, Tom, Tim, and Todd, if you guys paint the house, maybe fix that roof, maybe fix that stove, maybe do this, let's maybe put some carpet in it, maybe new flooring. If you put, you know, $10,000 into this house, I might be able to get you $100,000 more. You know, we can, you know, spruce it up a little, make it look like, you know, it's more, you know, 19, instead of 1950s, let's make it look like it's more 2020s. And they'll do that. All of that is an expense that goes, that gets added to your basis. So, and I had one of these. I had one of these just recently. So grandma left them the house and I was very emphatic before they started their work. I want to know what it's worth right now as it sits. So it was $180,000. They put, I want to say they put 40 into it. I can't remember. 40,000 into it. Really did a nice job. Made it look very nice. So now their cost basis is now the 180 plus the 40, 220,000 is their cost basis. They sold it for 300, over 300, and got, so they made a capital gains of $80,000. So they're going to have to pay capital gains tax on $80,000. Now, in this scenario, Tommy, Timmy, and Todd split that $80,000 three ways because they were all equal, and really they paid very little capital gains. And it was long term because they had it for over a year. So you pay the lower tax when it's long term. So there's a strategy. You may want to wait till it's over a year if you're going to take a project like that and you're in it already 8 months, 9 months, 10 months. Hey, let's just wait another 2 months because there is a substantial tax savings. Long term capital gains versus short term capital gains. So you know, I tell the story about the man that sold the property 7 days before 1 year. And there's no way around that. I mean, there's documentation. There was a closing. I mean, there's attorney documents with the dates on them. 7 days cost them $20,000. If he would have just put closing back a week, it would have $20,000. And there is just, you know, there's nothing you can do with that because it's documented. So be aware that that is a thing. Short-term capital gains versus long-term capital gains. And one last thing I wanted to say before I move on is there's this thinking out there that, well, let's put my name on grandma's property so that when grandma passes, it just comes to me fee simple. You know, it just comes to me because my name's on it. Yes, that is what would happen. However, that does change the whole step up and cost basis thing. Because if grandma just puts your name on her property, her cost basis is now your cost basis. So you remember they spent the, you know, $10,000 to build the house. Now your cost basis on that house is $10,000. Which if you're planning on living in the house, you know, I had a scenario. I just had a meeting with somebody that she actually sold her house and moved in with grandma. And she's retired. And her mother, and her plan is to just live in the house. She's going to take care of her mother till her mother passes away. Her mother's got health issues. She wants to be there for her mother. So all her children are, the daughter, all her children are grown and moved. So she's got nothing there. So she's just going to stay there. So her plan is to live in the house, her plan, and keep the house. She has no plans to sell it. But if she ever does sell it, because now her name is on the title, they went ahead and put her name on the title, she's got the cost basis of the mother. So her cost basis, I think, was, she was going to find out. There was a mortgage on it, so she knows the exact number. There's paper, she's got a file with the exact number, but it was like $40,000 for a house that's potentially worth $200,000. So when she goes to sell it, she's going to have that step up in cost basis. But if she lives in it long enough, it'll be her primary residence. So there'll be an exclusion there. So, and I'm telling you all this to tell you, there's a lot of moving parts to this. And if you have a scenario like this, if you want to talk about this, give me a call. We can have a meeting, 828-289-9300. And just know the moving parts before you do something. You know, I tell the story about the parents that were going to put the house in the children's name. And literally, they were going to sign the papers. The father had all the papers drawn up and they were going to sign them. And the husband looks at the wife and says, I'm there. Now they're my clients already. And he said, did you call Gilbert about this and ask him about this? He said it just hit him out of nowhere. Like, did you call Gilbert and ask him? And she said, nah, let's go. We'll be talking to him later when we do our taxes. He says, why don't we just wait? Let's just wait a couple of days. Call Gilbert on Monday, because they were doing it over the weekend. They were at the grandparents, at the parents' house. And he said, let's just wait. I mean, there's no urgency with this. Let's just wait and call Gilbert. Well, when I looked at it, it was like, absolutely not. You do not want to do this. This is going to create a major problem for you. They were going to get hit with major capital gains if they kept that house. And there's other ways to achieve what they wanted to do. So that's just what I'm telling you. There's a lot of moving parts to this. And if you're an executor, please be aware you have responsibilities to the estate, and the IRS will hold you liable. Okay? They will hold you liable as the executor for not filing tax returns and for not doing paperwork correctly. So, okay. So let's talk about, Tom, what else do I want to talk about? I didn't give you my itinerary. So I've been talking about ERC for the last couple of weeks here on the radio. And we've got, what time do we got left? I got to watch my time. We got 10 minutes. 10 minutes. An eternity in radio. 10 minutes. So I've been talking about this ERC. And last week, I didn't mean to go into it for 30 minutes. I think I put half the people asleep because it's technical. No, it's very technical. And you know, the tax practitioners out there that listen to me love it. They're like, thank you for what you said. So I've been getting calls and people have been saying, so should we wait to file? Okay, so ERC, employee retention credit. Some people call it employee retention tax credit, ERTC, but it's ERC. So the IRS has received, are you ready for this? 600,000 applications. 600,000. The deadline's coming April 15th of 2024 for the 2020 tax year. So with that deadline coming, people are just panicking and doing this. So they have 600,000. Many, if not most, are questionable. So the IRS issued a stop order. They stopped it. Now, they're saying that they've actually frozen the processing. They've frozen the processing. They're calling it a moratorium of new applications. The 600,000 claims that they have that are in the queue, what they're doing is, whereas they normally look for a 90-day process time, they've now are making it a 180-day process time. So it's going to be 6 months, and it could be even longer if they decide they're going to audit you. Which I'm thinking they're going to audit a lot of people. They have hired for this task, for this job, 3,700 new employees just for this. Yeah. You know the 87,000 they were going to hire? They've assigned 3,700 of them to work on this. So if you have a legitimate, so what happened is the IRS kind of used really strong language. I mean, they scared all of us in the preparer community, all of us enrolled agents and CPAs and tax attorneys that do this. They were trying to put the fear of God in us. And they said, you know, you will be prosecuted. You will, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. And they're going to do it. I don't doubt for 1 minute they're going to do it, because I know the IRS listens to me. I know Aaron Collins listens to me. Okay. So I got to say that. I know somebody at the IRS is listening to me. Okay. So I do believe they're going to do something about this. I don't take it as a, what's that old expression? Saber rattling.
Yeah.
It's real. They're going to do something. But they scared a lot of people. There was a barrage of negative information. There was one tax website called it professional intimidation. And it was to scare the tax professionals and the business owners, and rightfully so. Okay. Some of them needed to be scared. But if you have a legitimate ERC claim, you legitimately were affected by COVID, you legitimately lost business, you legitimately kept employees on payroll, you kept paying them during this period, you were shut down. And I have, like I said, I have three, and there's a fourth one that I'm looking at, of all my businesses that I know that I feel good about doing. But what's happening is, okay, so let me finish that thought. So if your legitimate claim, go ahead and do it. Yes, there's a moratorium, but you don't want to lose your place in line. And you don't want to have this, you don't want to get caught with this April 15th deadline. What we're afraid is going to happen is, okay, we're coming into the holidays, 9 weeks left in the year. We're coming into the holidays. People check out about taxes. They don't think about it. And then we're in January, and everybody's going to be doing their 2023 tax return. January, February, March, April. This April 15th deadline could come whistling by, and people won't get these ERC claims in. That's the concern that a lot of us have. So if you feel like you have a legitimate claim, go ahead and file it. They didn't say not to file it. It's just going to sit in a queue till they start releasing them. It's going to be in line with that 600,000 claims for ERC. So do not avoid doing it. But please be aware of these aggressive promotions that where they call you and they tell you, you get this, you can get this. And they're saying, and this is the thing that's got a lot of us worried, is they're telling people, oh, your enrolled agent is wrong. You do qualify. I've had people tell me that on the phone, they've told them that. People have said, my CPA said I don't qualify. Oh, your CPA's wrong. My tax attorney says I don't qualify. Your tax attorney's wrong. Your enrolled agent is wrong. Your guy doesn't know what he's talking about. They're literally saying that. And so the people don't know who to believe, which really, you know, it really just shows. I mean, greed is a powerful thing. The guy's telling them, you qualify for hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are people that have gotten millions, Tom. Millions. Millions of dollars from this. And the IRS, so the last warning that the IRS has is, the last warning is this. These people are charging you a commission, okay, anywhere from 15 to 25%, which a lot of us are saying is illegal. The IRS is looking into it. You're not supposed to charge commissions on a refund and for tax returns. And the Form 941 is a tax return. Okay. So they're charging you fees. There are people, I have seen it, they have paid $150,000, $140,000. What the IRS is saying is, if we audit you and we determine that you have to pay that money back, okay, so you got this money, now you're audited, and you have to pay the money back, you could lose that fee. The IRS is not going to give you credit for that fee. It is not an expense. You're going to owe back the full million, not the million minus the fee, because that's the biggest problem. People are saying, well, what about this fee? So the bottom line, the last thing I'm going to say in 3 minutes is that please make sure your claim is valid. Look at it and just make sure it's valid. Because this is just the tip of the iceberg. But if you have a claim, Go ahead and make it. Do not wait. The IRS, by the way, released some information. It's on their website, irs.gov. Look up employee retention credit. They've got a Q&A that's very informative, and it'll walk you through a lot of things, and you can hear what the IRS has to say. If you want some information from me, give me a call, 828-289-9300. And unlike the guy on the phone that said, I don't know what I'm talking about, I do know what I'm talking about, okay? And if you're somebody that just listens to me, you have your CPA. If he told you you don't qualify, he knows what he's talking about. Trust me, he knows what he's talking about, because we want to help you. It's not like we don't want you to get this money. I mean, I'd love to have all my small businesses get this money, but a lot of them don't qualify. I had a lady call me. Okay, I'm going to tell it. I'm going to tell a story. The lady calls me and she said, they're telling me I can get all this money. She had a pizza business. Did I talk about her on the air before? I don't remember. I mean, COVID was the best thing for pizza businesses.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, COVID was the best thing for any carryout business.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like people were just sitting at home eating. Okay, that's all they did for 3 months. She couldn't find enough employees.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you tell the IRS with a straight face that you lost business? You didn't. Well, what they're saying is you tell them that you could have had more business, but because of the supply side issues and the employee issues and the hiring issues,
Yeah. You
couldn't do more money. So we could have done $2 million, not a million. So you owe me money. That's what they're arguing. And people are doing it. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. And it's not going to be worth it. And at the end of the day, you're going to have to pay that $1 million back or whatever amount of money you've got back. Okay. 1 minute left. So I'm going to be back. We're going to be talking about tax planning. I'm going to get into some end of the year tax planning things in the weeks to come. If you have any questions or any issues you'd like me to discuss, please give me a call, 828-289-9300. Tom, I'm going to wrap it up here. Those of you live streaming, thank you very much for tuning in. Pick up my podcast, GilbertTalksTaxes.com. I can't think of anything else. I'll see you next week. You'll be here. I'll be here. Gilbert Talks Taxes, WCAB, AM 590, FM 100.9.